This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And I think what we're seeing is both that he just has no regard for democracy, but also we're seeing his own paranoia come out and that he doesn't trust the Tunisian people to vote for him. He really has to ensure that they have no other option.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, discussing Tunisian President Kais Saied's efforts to secure a victory in Sunday's elections. Details coming up. Also, we look at whether Israel has an end game as it fights Hamas, Hezbollah, and other Iranian proxies. And Chinese automakers are offering prices so cheap in South Africa that existing brands risk being pushed to the curb. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. Tunisia holds a presidential election Sunday that seems certain to give incumbent Kais Saied another term in office, with his main rivals jailed, disqualified, or otherwise sidelined from the race. Is this the end of Tunisia's fragile democracy, or just another step on a rocky road since its 2011 revolution? Lisa Bryan reports.
Tunisians voting for change 5 years ago faced plenty of choices. More than two dozen candidates ran in the 2019 presidential race. Political newcomer Kais Saied won the runoff with 73% of the vote. He promised to root out corruption and give power back to the people. Things are very different this time around. Tunisia's election commission, whose members were appointed by Saied, approved just three candidates for Sunday's presidential vote. One was considered close to the president. Another is sentenced to a dozen years in jail. The third is Kais Saied. Mikhail Ayari is senior Tunisia analyst for the International Crisis Group.
Is populist still popular? It's not true saying that everybody wants to get rid of him. But in middle classes and high classes of Nassab, he's not popular at all.
As president, Saied has rewritten the constitution, dissolved parliament, and ushered in new legislative bodies with limited powers. Voter participation was low on elections for each of Saied's changes. Just over 11% of Tunisians turned out for the legislative votes. These changes took place after Saied seized wide-reaching powers in 2021. Supporters praise Saied for cleaning up corruption and political gridlock. Some back his populist nationalist rhetoric and efforts to move beyond pro-Western alliances. Critics say the president is taking the country back to pre-revolution days of fear and authoritarian rule and failing to deliver on jobs and the economy. They point to dozens of political rivals, journalists, and rights activists who have been targeted or jailed in recent years. Kamel Jandoubi headed Tunisia's first independent electoral commission after the revolution.
Kais Saied's popularity has dropped considerably. That's why he's doing everything to lock up the political process. Because if he guarantees even the minimum of free expression, he very likely risks losing.
Most observers believe Saied will win a second term. His opponents promise to carry on their fight. Rita Dries is a senior member of the opposition El Nafta party.
People are going to contest his legitimacy. A peaceful political resistance will gain ground, and things won't last long for Kais Saied.
Voter turnout on Sunday may determine how big a mandate or resistance Saied will have moving forward. Lisa Bryant, VOA News.
Tunisian politician Ayachi Zamel, a former lawmaker and a candidate in Sunday's presidential election, has been sentenced to 12 years in jail. The electoral authority, ISIE, rejected the bids of about 14 other hopefuls. That leaves the frontrunner, incumbent President Kais Saied, who was elected in 2019, and former parliament member Zuhair Magzawi, who was also a supporter of the president. Since his election, Saied has dissolved parliament, replacing it with the legislature with limited powers and taken greater control over the government. Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, discussed the challenges regarding elections in Tunisia with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think it's been clear from the start that Kais Saied would do whatever it takes to manipulate the legal environment to ensure his victory. But what we've seen is he's taken this really to the extreme by eliminating any real opposition. And on the one hand, what we've seen is, you know, he's acting similar to a lot of other autocrats in the region who try to engineer the election in advance so that the scales are sort of weighted in their favor. But what we normally see is some sort of facade or some sort of semblance of a real contest. And like, if you look at what we just saw in Algeria a few weeks ago, where President Tebboune was running for re-election, and he at least allowed real opposition candidates, including an Islamist candidate, to run, even though he clearly knew he would win. But in Tunisia, Kais Saied has left nothing to chance. And I think what we're seeing is both that he just has no regard for democracy, but also we're seeing his own paranoia come out and that he doesn't trust the Tunisian people to vote for him. He really has to ensure that they have no other option.
Ahead of the vote, Tunisia's electoral authority, ISIE, had rejected the bids of some 14 hopefuls. Human Rights Watch accused ISIE of skewing the ballot in favor of Saied, saying holding elections amid such repression makes a mockery of Tunisians' right to participate in free and fair elections. How would this political environment impact the turnout of voters?
I think that this really clear and obvious electoral manipulation is going to turn off many voters. What we've seen under Saied is that each of the elections that have been held under him had very, very low turnout. You know, in the legislative elections, there was just 11% turnout, which is one of the lowest in legislative elections in the world. And so I think in this current contest, the Tunisians understand they don't have a choice. And so why would they bother to show up at the polls? But it's what's not clear, I think, at this point is what role the opposition is going to take in that. Will it enact a formal boycott or some sort of spoiled ballot initiative? Or are people just going to stay home out of sort of boredom or just disinterest in the election? I think either way, the turnout's going to likely be very, very low.
A majority of Tunisian parliament members approved a bill on Friday to transfer election oversight powers from the Independent Administrative Court to the country's General Appeals Court. This bill sparked public protests opposing the law, characterizing it as a blow to the foundations of the electoral system and aim to strip the administrative judiciary of its exclusive role. Can you explain why this law is a blow to the Tunisian electoral system?
This is, I think, one of the more egregious and frankly shocking developments in what has been a really unconventional electoral period. You know, the administrative court was attempting to do its job and serve as an apolitical body by adjudicating various cases. But when they decided to reinstate three of the potential presidential candidates who had been disqualified by the ISIE, Saied began to see them as a threat and sought to undermine them. And stripping the court of its power just days before the election, you know, when you add that on top of Zamel's sentence, I think this is sufficient evidence to anyone watching that this election is neither free nor fair.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Lebanon's health ministry says an Israeli airstrike in Beirut killed at least 9 people and injured 14 others early yesterday. It's the deadliest airstrike inside the capital since the fighting broke out between Israel and Hezbollah. This as Israel continues its military campaign in Gaza and is fighting other Iranian proxies along its borders. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked the Middle East political analyst Andreas Krieg at King's College in London if Israel has an end game.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it hasn't had an end game in Gaza. It certainly has none in the West Bank. And obviously everything, all of that is related to what's going on in southern Lebanon. So there's still no end game there. So we're looking at a different stringing together of different tactical and operational objectives to kind of make up an overall strategy. But obviously that's not how it works. It's very much bottom up. And this is also why Israel has been continuously over the last 12 months kind of trapped in what we call mission creep, which means they're kind of creeping from one to the next objective without a real achievable end game in place. And if the overall objective is obviously to return Israeli citizens to northern Israel and doing that safely, then you need to create a situation where Hezbollah, A, cannot fire and doesn't fire rockets anymore, and B, you need to be able to maintain this status, that even if you were to achieve it in southern Lebanon, you need to be able to maintain it. So just seizing ground, and then potentially, obviously, the argument is they don't want to hold the ground, they want to retreat then, and even holding it would be extremely risky, will be requiring quite a lot of capacity. And then holding it for an extensive period of time, or then withdrawing from it, would create a vacuum where Hezbollah would move back in. So I think the overall objective now is degradation, eroding command and control, communications, and the ability for them to launch missiles. The longer this will go on for, as long as that's going on for, Hezbollah will continue striking and will try to hit Israel where it hurts.
Hezbollah is much stronger than Hamas. And as you said, Israel wants to degrade Hezbollah, and that's why they've gone in. But can it continue fighting on these multiple fronts like this for several months now? And how can it do that without the United States getting more involved?
They can. I mean, the U.S. is already complicit in all of this. Obviously, they're underwriting the entire campaign. And that's the big problem, because, you know, whoever's going to be the next president is saying that the U.S. should not be drawn into this sort of conflict. And they are being drawn in already, whether this is with Iran or just by obviously delivering billions of dollars worth of military aid to Israel for a war that seems to be now, you know, it's the longest war in Israel's history. Netanyahu has been unable to deliver on any of the objectives in Gaza. So Hamas has been degraded, but still operational, hostages on a home, tunnel system still intact. Hamas is still able to launch, even if it's much less than before, able to launch attacks. So I do think that this, the same scenario will probably happen in Lebanon, because Hezbollah is stronger than Hamas. It's better prepared. It had 18 years to do so, had a lot more support from Iran, has a tunnel infrastructure that is very, very much intact, much deeper underground, constructed by engineers from Iran, North Korea. So, you know, the situation is far worse than in Gaza. And you have an IDF that is now bogged down on four fronts, Lebanon, West Bank, Gaza, and Iran. So there's a massive overstretch.
That was Andreas Krieg, a Middle East political analyst at King's College in London, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Damme. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. While China and the West have been pushing for more electric vehicles on the road, gas-powered cars still dominate in Africa. Chinese automakers are tapping into the Southern African car market, the largest on the continent, with prices so attractive that dealers say existing brands risk being pushed to the curb. Kate Bartlett has the details from Johannesburg.
Ross Gray is looking for a gas-powered SUV that suits his young family and a job that involves a lot of work on building sites.
The reason I'm looking at something like this, the Chinese vehicles, is because, first of all, the price, it's a lot cheaper than your big brands.
The average Chinese SUV is about half the price of some of the more established brands from other countries. Ralph Heibner, Bike's regional sales manager, says the prices of these Chinese gas-powered cars draw customers to his dealership.
Not cheap in a sense that they're dumping product in South Africa, but affordable in terms of monthly payment, because for the South African consumer, it's not about the full price of the vehicle, but what am I paying on a monthly basis? That has to do with economics.
Chinese brands have become serious contenders in South Africa's auto industry, says Mari Magia, salesperson for another Chinese brand called Haval.
I do know of a few that are closing down because of the Chinese dealerships that are opening up. We're booming, if I can say that.
In the past, many South African consumers were wary of the quality of Chinese-made vehicles. But buying habits may be changing. Gray says he's more comfortable with Chinese-made quality nowadays. There's also another, more local reason for considering a Chinese-made SUV. Gray's last car, a pricier Toyota Hilux, was stolen.
Being South Africa, the Chinese vehicles are not on the stolen list like the big brands are.
While only about one-third of South Africans own a vehicle, it is the largest car market on the continent. Ford, Toyota, Volkswagen and Mercedes have manufacturing plants in the country producing vehicles for export or for the local market. The newest Chinese players in the car market are disrupting the industry here, says Michael Mabasa, head of South Africa's NAMSA, the Automotive Business Council.
In the last 5 years, we've seen an introduction of some very interesting brands that are coming into the country from China. And those brands have grown in the market and they've surpassed, in fact, many of our traditional brands that we have in the country.
Mabasa says there has been a 200% increase of Chinese gas-powered car brands coming into the country between 2019 and 2023. The growing popularity of Chinese brands doesn't mean there aren't bumps in the road. In 2018, Bike opened a manufacturing plant in the Eastern Cape, but production stalled, reportedly due to the pandemic, labor disputes, and a lack of brand awareness.
They're still in a setting up phase. They've obviously experienced some hiccups in getting that particular plant off the ground.
Bike's business detours aside, President Cyril Ramaphosa is looking down the road to a greener future, courting more investments from China and urging electric car maker BYD to set up shop in South Africa. With Sahir Kasim, Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
The United States policy on China has been mostly consistent from the administration of Donald Trump to the White House of Joe Biden, with both presidents viewing China as America's biggest competitor. But in the campaign for next month's presidential election, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump have slightly different approaches towards the superpower. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains.
We strengthen, not abdicate, our global leadership.
If a tragedy happens and we don't win, there will be zero car jobs.
These two presidential candidates clash on several topics, but Democratic and Republican nominees Kamala Harris and Donald Trump agree on one issue, the threat of China. Robert O'Brien served as national security advisor during the Trump administration.
I think that the threat that we face from China is far more serious than we faced against the Soviet Union in the Cold War.
O'Brien says the U.S. should deal with China through a show of strength.
It's not just military strength. It's economic strength. It's diplomatic strength. It's soft power and cultural strength. That is what scares our adversaries.
On economics, both the Trump and Biden administrations have used tariffs to counter what they describe as China dumping cheap products abroad, making competition tough for U.S. businesses. Here's Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump at a campaign rally in Michigan.
China is going to take over all of your business because of the electric car and because they have the material we don't.
Trump is proposing tariffs of up to 60% on Chinese imports. Harris has also acknowledged U.S.-China competition.
I will make sure that we lead the world into the future on space and artificial intelligence, that America, not China, wins the competition.
Jeremy Suri is a history and public affairs professor at University of Texas at Austin.
She has supported some of the restrictions on trade that the Biden administration has supported as well, but she is certainly not a big tariff person.
Analysts say Trump is more transactional.
Probably my first call, I'm going to call up President Xi. I'm going to say you have to honor the deal you made. We made a deal. You'd buy $50 billion worth of American farm product, and I guarantee you he will buy it.
In the area of foreign policy, O'Brien says it's important to build alliances with like-minded countries.
There was a time when America could shoulder the burden alone. We can't do it anymore alone.
One expert says Trump has broken away from the traditional Republican foreign policy of establishing strong alliances. University of Houston senior research fellow Richard Murray.
Trump is just viscerally not much into alliances and much more into what's in it for us.
With election rhetoric ramping up over Chinese competition and security threats, some Americans fear the real losers may be Asian Americans and Chinese people living in the U.S., says Stephen Pei, who immigrated to the U.S. from Taiwan and works as a university professor.
They consider U.S. is facing a threat, the whole of society's threat from China. Then it takes the whole of society's threat response to deal with the threat from the faculty, students, researchers from China. I will be labeled because people cannot tell me, am I from Taiwan or from China or from Korean?
They're coming in from China, 3130.
With Trump's tough talk, some Asian Americans worry about increased anti-Chinese sentiment if he is elected. But Asian American Republicans say they hope Trump, being a businessman, can make a deal with China that will benefit everyone in America. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
The European Union's top court ruled today in favor of a Western Sahara independence movement, confirming a verdict that cancelled trade deals allowing Morocco to export fish and farm products to the EU from the disputed region. While the fish agreement has expired in the meantime, the deal on agricultural products is still active. According to the French news agency AFP, the court said that protocol should stay in place for 12 more months in view of the serious negative consequences which its immediate annulment would entail for the external action of the European Union. The Court of Justice of the European Union rejected all appeals against its 2021 decision in the case brought by the Polisario Front. The group opposes Morocco's claim to sovereignty over the Western Sahara region, a former Spanish colony. Time now for our sports roundup and VOA's sports analyst Mokbilia Baro in studio. Thanks for being on the show, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me.
So the UEFA Champions League and Europa League had some unbelievable games. Can you mention a few of them?
Absolutely, Hayes. If we're going to start off with Dortmund versus Celtic, Dortmund won 7-1. This is an unbelievable number. This is a team who made it all the way to the finals last year. So they are trying to get that revenge because they were not able to win. But they are really showing their class in their first two games. They are undefeated at the moment with the new Champions League schedule as well. If I'm looking at another team, Manchester City, that we are very familiar with, won 4-0 against Slovan Bratislava. Bayern Leverkusen was able to beat AC Milan 1-0. Arsenal beat PSG, the French heavyweights, 2-0. And Aston Villa really shocked everybody by beating Bayern Munich 1-0. So if I'm just looking at that, that's what I've seen on the Champions League side. On the Europa side, we have to talk about Manchester United, man. They come out hot, blazing, and they score two quick goals against FC Porto, who's one of the most dominant teams to play in the Portuguese league. But, you know, playing against Porto at home is very difficult. Porto's able to draw the game 2-2 and then go up 3-2 up until the dying minutes where Manchester United scored a goal to secure a point. So not all was lost. They were still able to gain 1 point. Now, if I'm looking at any of the other games that were very interesting to me, I would say Galatasaray versus RFS was a 2-2 draw. And Athletic Club beat AZ Alkmaar 2-0.
And Mokbil, the WNBA semifinals are heating up. Who do you think will make it all the way?
At the moment, the most dominating team, Yeheyes, looks like the New York Liberty. They have a 2-0 lead against the Aces. The Minnesota Lynx and the Phoenix Sun also, the Connecticut Sun, I should say, are 1-1 drawed up. They have a game three, that will be happening tonight. So this is a best of game five series, first to three wins. If I was to put everything on somebody, I would say the New York Liberty, simply because they're rolling. They're very hot this summer.
And lastly, Kenya's second fastest woman over 10 kilometers has been suspended. Why?
Yes, Immaculate Anyango, the world's second fastest woman over 10 kilometers in Kenya, has been banned for up to 4 years, testing positive for prohibited testosterone and a banned blood-boosting hormone, EPO. We've also seen so many different challenges when it comes to the Kenyan team, Olympic teams, and all of their running organizations. So hopefully we're able to crack that down, because Kenya is such a monster when it comes to, you know, running in Africa.
Mokbilia Baro, our sports analyst. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.